You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Guidepost. I'm doing my best to maintain composure right now because we had a little warm up session before we hit record, and this is going to be, I guess, our third installment of Shop Talk. We were going over different things to talk about, so I can tell you that this should be a pretty funny show. Today we're going to have Cody, Scotty and Bailey and Tony. So all of our names end in Y. I don't know what that means or if there's going to be some kind of black hole that opens up when we stop recording this thing. But yeah, so we got me, Scotty, Bailey and Cody on this one to make you laugh, chuckle, relate to us on a different level on a drive home while you're mowing the lawn, doing the dishes or piling up some honeydews. So how's everyone doing today, boys? I feel like this is going to be a good one.
We're good.
Everything's good down here.
That's a lie, Cody. You had a hell of a morning.
Yeah, we've been at the vet. We've been dealing with car batteries and all sorts of stuff. So outside of all the shitty stuff I've dealt with today, it's been a great day.
That's the kind of can-do attitude I'm looking for. So it's funny because I'm looking at Scotty. And I can't get into why I was there yet, but last time I saw Scotty, there was a one of the biggest lightning bolts I've ever seen in my life coming down in the middle of the river.
Yeah, several.
We were standing and fishing, and we looked at each other and we're like, we're done.
Yeah.
We're good.
That was kind of silly.
Yeah, redfish aren't that important. Uh-huh. But, you know, it was good to see you in Charleston. So, Bailey, I'm guessing down there, it's probably like, I don't know, the seventh circle of Dante's Inferno. Was it?
Yeah, it's been raining every day and like 1,000 degrees. I've literally was doing like dodging lightning bolts on the way in this morning. I mean, it's like normally you get that like, you know, 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon is when you got to get out of here. But lately it's like 7 a.m. that the storms start and you're just immediately having to run from them. So it's been interesting, but I can definitely echo what you're saying that no redfish is worth getting struck down by Zeus himself.
Oh my God, no. Like, I definitely felt the Zeus vibes, Scotty. Did you?
Yeah, it was pretty apocalyptic.
Zeus-y?
We get the same storms every day, every four o'clock. That one was a little bit different. I was driving across the bridge and saw two bolts hit the water at the same time. You know, that old fishing
like
meme.
Double rainbow.
Yeah, it's like, screw those fish in particular, you know.
Dude, I saw a video on TikTok the other day that was like these people on the beach and they were filming this pelican like walking down the beach. And it was a typical thing where it was like the storm was probably like a few miles away, but it was real cloudy. And you just see this lightning bolt like totally, you know, cloud to ground connect, like on the beach. They're like from the beach house. And you just hear all this like, oh my God, it's screaming stuff. And this pelican just like rolls over after the explosion, like sand flies. And then you just hear the pelican. And it just like the funniest thing I saw all week, I think, for some
that
reason.
That reminds me of the videos where people like rehab a mouse that they found in their lawn for like a month, and then they release it in the lawn, and the eagle takes it like three seconds after it gets away.
Right.
Yeah.
What about the guy?
Really good one of a pigeon that was in a work site, and he grabs it, and he like lets it go, and it flies like 50 feet straight into a glass window and dies. And the guy recording it just goes, oh, you idiot. It's like
the best vicious cycle.
Right. How about the guy that tried to kill a mouse? He had a fire in his backyard, like yard debris, and he found like a mouse or a rat, and he threw it in the fire, and it ran back in his house and burned his house down.
Oh, my God.
Dude, the worst.
The best.
When that happens.
The best ever.
ASJ does not condone animal cruelty.
Yeah. Anybody old enough to remember when Randy Johnson threw like 101 mile per hour fastball and vaporized that pigeon?
Sure.
That's insane.
Jeez. So, I mean, talk about an unlucky pigeon. So, listen.
I'll never forget when I was fishing the Cape Cod Canal when I was a teenager, and I launched like a 3-4 ounce plug halfway across the canal and just absolutely smoked. You could not line up the physics perfectly. It was literally like Randy Johnson, a seagull straight out of the water, puff of feathers, dive bomb straight in the middle, and I felt awful about it. But it was also one of those things where it's like, I couldn't do that again if I tried. Like, the accuracy of a bird flying straight down a canal at full speed.
You said 3 ounces? That's like a 50 cal slug, dude.
It was quick. It was quick.
So wait, R. you know, Cody, you just told me that, and it reminded me of, you know, because like we fish breaking birds all the time. Well, when we had fish here, we'd fish breaking birds from like June to, you know, freaking December, like cast and blast duck hunting. And it was always like, you always were nervous about like the middle of the road fly fisherman on the boat. Cause you like, man, the last thing I want to do is like wrestle with, you know, some giant ass seagull that's wrapped up in the fly line, got a hook in its ass. Yeah.
We hooked trying a pelican to recently. Bite me.
Yeah. I mean, no fun. So this immediately, the thought of the last time that happened where I was like undoing, I was playing like origami with an eagle gull, you know, trying to poke my eyes out. Bailey sent us a picture of two clients hogtied.
That's the most cursed image. Listen, that is my line.
But they were, hold on, I'm just gonna paint the picture and we'll let you go, Bailey, because the story's too good. Hogtied with fly line, two grown men. Hogtied with fly line, one with a hook in his hand, and the trolling motor, and hogtied to the boat, trolling motor with fly line. And we got a picture of Bailey on the polling from the polling platform, just being like, shoot me now.
That was my opus. That's the best picture I've ever produced in my guiding career. I sent it in the little group chat so y'all can see it while we're talking. It's in GIF form. So anyway, yeah, that was like that was actually on the day of the eclipse, that like total eclipse we had. And, you know, I guess
that guy's face was totally eclipsed by his buddy's ass.
I was going to say, I think it was the guy's ass, Bailey. It probably wasn't the eclipse.
I mean, it was the most compromising. Listen, that could be blackmail. I mean, if like you had somebody and needed to accuse them of like, you know, some deviant stuff. But like the guy is hooked. The way he did it is he hooked himself in the hand and then got the line in the trolling motor and it started sucking him up. So he was on all fours on the front of my boat, like, or I don't know, it's like a half squat position. And then his buddy is like squatting down there with him, head buried in scrotum region. I mean, it just so happens that that's where we got. And I was on the platform taking pictures. Oh, it was something. I literally took that picture and I had to get off the platform and stop fishing for like 15 minutes because I just couldn't stop laughing at how absurd I mean, I'm not even saying this. That's probably, I am more, that's my favorite picture I've ever taken on the water. I think I could say that.
Oh, God, dude, I just took myself on mute because I was cackling like an idiot the whole time you were trying to describe it. So the other one recently, well, not, I guess it wasn't that recently, but I couldn't make fun of them. These individuals, this is one of those moments where you set people up with one of your guides, you know, you're heading the guide association and maybe they're related to you and younger relatives of yours. And you're like, please don't act foolish. And just don't be, you know, just temper your youthful exuberance and go catch some giant redfish and stuff with Bailey and you'll have a good time. And I think they started drinking heavily, like before the plane landed, and were kind enough. I don't want to set this up too much for you, Bailey, because this story is pretty good too. They were kind enough to bring stuff to make food on the boat.
Yes.
It's a Southern thing. And Bailey, I'll let you take the story from there, buddy.
Well, yeah. So, you know, these were some young whippersnappers, and Tony had set everything up, and I guess they were trying to be on their best behavior in that sense. So, but there was definitely some drinking. I mean, you know, they're young boys, and young boys will do young boy things, but they did bring a bunch of food. And we actually had a great day of fishing that day. It was like one of these like real cloudy days, but it was like dead flat. And so the fish were coming up randomly and like waking and blowing stuff up, and they were catching fish. So we're kind of just having fun, and like, it was a good time, and they were making sandwiches and stuff. So I figured, you know, I've put these guys on enough fish, they should make me a freaking sandwich. So I told one of them, I'm like, you know, throw me a roll with some cheese or something to that effect. And like, I was untangling somebody else's mess and then like returned to the middle of the boat where my food is waiting for me. And there's, can I disclose the identities, or am I keeping this under wraps?
No, I mean,
Tony's nephews.
They're my nephews that I try my best to take care of.
There's Tony's nephew standing
at
there.
At least they were decent fly fishermen, right?
We had a great time. And they're supposed to come back this year. So, I mean, you know, I let them back in the boat. That tells you everything you need to know. Anyway, Tony's nephew's like standing there with like this blank expression on his face, because I think he was even confused by his own actions at that point. But he's standing there with his like fruit roll up of cheese that he's rolled up into his hand. I mean, thank God he didn't put like mayonnaise on it or something, but it was just like nothing but just some cheese rolled in, like, and he's clutching it like in his fist like this. And he's like just doing this to me. Yeah, he's just holding his hand out for me, and I'm just like looking at him, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, where's the bread? There's Hawaiian King rolls right there. There's like 3 dozen of them, because you guys brought like so much freaking food. It's like a golden corral in the boat. So just throw me a freaking, and he's like, well, this is what you want, right? I'm like, no. And so then I remember now he proceeds to try to put the cheese that he's been molesting for like the last minute while I'm doing something, and he proceeds to try to put that on a roll for me to eat. And I'm like, throw that in the freaking water and get me some new cheese. Don't approach me with your tepid body temp cheese. Ooh. It was like a little melted kind of, because his palms were sweaty and hot. It was gross.
God. Oh, I guess it runs in the family, man.
You're saying you've done that, Tony?
No, but I've done worse.
It was definitely the first time I've been served in that manner. I'll say that. I was taken aback.
There's definitely some communication issues between guide and client sometimes.
Bit of a breakdown on that one.
Cody, to put a button on Bailey's story, I got the version when they returned, and Bailey had said, I'd like a roll with cheese, and they interpreted that as, I'd like rolled cheese. And
I remember my first time in Louisiana, I didn't like quite know what they were talking about either. So
turn it into a straw form.
Right. Just interpret this the best we can.
If there's any state that would request rolled cheese, it would definitely be a guy from Louisiana.
With some remoulade on it, boys. Come on.
Yeah.
I had some guy calling remoulade sauce. Sorry. calling remoulade sauce like all day. He kept calling it like remoulade or something, and I was like kept correcting him, and he kept doing it, and it just pissed me off all day. Sorry, you made me think about that.
I'm sorry. We can get a shrink to talk to you about that if you
need.
What
a delicious remoulade. I was like, oh, remoulade, remoulade.
Yeah, that bothered me too. I dated a girl from Louisiana, and everything I said pissed her off. Like I would say, pecan pralines. She looked at me like I had a booger on my face. She's like, they're pecan pralines. I might not know. Yeah. You were wrong here. And we went to New Orleans, and yeah, I'll be damned if they're not pecan pralines.
But she's right.
We'll see.
Well, everything you say pissing off some girl from Louisiana is at least consistent. I mean, I can attest to that. It's easy to do.
Yeah, I've found just not talking solves that problem.
Cody, what were you going to say? I totally...
I don't even remember.
About remoulade.
Yeah, remoulade sauce. This was food like five years ago. No, we were up in a mud creek, like catching finger mullet and then just like freelining them on J hooks across this little point. There's some like redfish and tarpon and stuff like that. And just throwing a little cast net for the little fingers that are running up and down the mud bank. And I got like six of them or four of them, whatever. And took them and I shook them into a little bucket. And I said, hey, just go throw this back in the live well. This is back when I had a skiff, my Hell's Bay. And so then he did that. I threw the net one more time. This was a friend of a friend. I had never met the guy before this day. I throw the cast net again, get another couple. I'm like, that's all we need. We're just fishing for a little bit. And I go to put them back and open the live well, and the live well is empty. And I'm like, I'm like, did you put those back in the water? He's like, no, I threw them in the live well. And I opened my dry hatch, and it was full of water and a bunch of mullet swimming around.
Oh, my God.
So the old angler guide communication can be critical to executing even the basics in the boat.
I got to say, that was probably like the first thing I learned starting guiding is like you really do have to kind of toddler proof the boat because you're not ready for people who aren't used to being in a boat. You know what I mean?
Yep. Down to the little things too of like knowing what's going to go down with the dance. Like I just ran a trip where we had three ladies out there trying to catch sailfish, but it's like the little things of when they're hooked up to the sailfish, I wasn't yelling less about like angling tactics, more so like calling for the second person who was on the rod to get someone had left up one of the hatch handles. Right. Yeah. And I know that fish is going to go right to left. It's going to take her up to the bow. So it's like those little things. You think it's just like, oh, you know, knowing which leader, knowing you're not, knowing your hook, knowing where to go. But it is all the little things down to how to take care of those people, you know, the hospitality side leading up to the bite, and then all the little things that can go wrong when they're hooked to the fish that have nothing to do with fishing. It is definitely baby-proof.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Cody, what
we've seen it go wrong.
Cody, wasn't that your post earlier where you had a lady lose a tarpon where the line got caught in her button? Was that yours?
Yeah. She was crushing it too. She was wearing, I forget what brand it was, but it was like a fishing shirt, but it had like six buttons up the front, kind of split at the bottom, below the bottom button. She made an outstanding cast. It was one of the most gangster eats of the year. Massive triple digit fish came up, slammed the fly on the surface, took off, and it's, when they, Bailey, you know this, and you know this too, Scotty, when they hit that hard, that all that standing line just kicks so quickly because there's so much force. And it came up and tied like this miraculous Mona Lisa of figure eights that you could never do if I gave you an hour. In like a half a second, it tied around that bottom button, instantly done.
I had a guy the other day, speaking of the line management stuff, I've been fishing him for a long time. He's an older fella. He's older now. And he can't stand up that well. And we were fishing way out on some oil rigs, and they're kind of loud sometimes out there when you're on that. And I was like, you know, I had two anglers, and the guy in the back is, I'm like talking to him and doing some stuff with him. And then the guy in the front hooks up, and I was looking out the back, so I didn't even know he had hooked into like a big jack or something. And I don't know, he's hooked up for quite some time, and then all of a sudden he just starts screaming like hollering, and I'm like head buried. I was actually cutting up a ladyfish to use as chum. So like I'm like doing something. I like look up with like knife in my hand because this guy's just hollering and he's got the he's sitting on the front of my bow. And the line is wrapped around his leg and it's like tourniqueting his leg. Like it looks like it's like cheese wiring his thigh off. And he's just like, ah, and it's like dragging this 80-year-old man slowly off the platform. And I like run up there and I'm like, son of a bitch. And I'm like trying to pull the rod out. And I'm like grabbing all, you know, I'm like all over this poor guy, like rubbing his thighs and trying to rub this fly line off. And he's just screaming. I'm like, say something. Like, I don't even know what's happening. You're just screaming on the bow of the boat, like in panic. We had just seen all these sharks and he's like freaked out.
I'll tell you what, that's why I throw class on any of my big rods. Anytime we're chasing anything, basically above snook, I always have a piece of, a lot of times I don't even tell anglers, like if people are trying to get their first tarpon, knowing there's a piece of 16 in their leader gets them super squirrely and there's like that mental hurdle, but it's as much for the fish. If you see a shark being, it'll palm it off, whatever, as it is like, you don't want someone degloving their finger because their line management sucks. And then, you know, or you lose an old man's entire thigh, like you're describing, like a little piece of 16 that would have just been done at that point.
Well, listen, we were straight 60 cutting off circulation to body limbs. It was the fly line. Like this fish was way out there and he's like standing there with the rod like this with his leg like up in the air and he's like, ah, and you just like, he's just screaming. I mean, like legitimately old man screaming. And I'm like, come running out from the back of the boat.
Yeah. I have a question for both you guys, because all three of us fish jacks and guided trips. Do you guys let clients double up when you're fishing jacks? If you have two anglers, would you let both of them hook a jack if you're in a feed?
Yes.
If they're reasonably proficient at doing stuff, yes.
Okay. Because I've gone to like, I almost don't like it because everything that can go wrong, people will be like, oh, it's so epic right here. We should double up. And I'm like, why don't you both prove to me first that this can go okay without everything going horribly wrong, because they are just the scariest things to be hooked to one-on-one, and then two one-on-ones going on both sides. And then they always connect. And as you guys know, they go into like those tuna circles when they get next to the boat, they turn sideways. And I've had fish get next to the boat, both go into tuna circle and then wrap around each other. Like they're building a bimini on the leaders below the boat.
And the clients are just sitting there going like, oh. And it's like, pull, you got a 12-weight, dude. You haven't broke them off yet. Start yanking on. They're like, oh. Just watching the fish just start to freaking finger trap themselves.
Yo, that's become one of my new things that like is a very much prove it to me that you deserve the opportunity to do so. Otherwise, the jacks go one at a time and everyone waits for their turn patiently.
Right.
I think I'm more or less in the same spot. I would agree with you.
I'd crave the chaos. I would let them go because they're so up and down here. We can't, you know, there'd be 100 of them out and then nothing, you know, until 2 days later. So, we would take them where we could get them. Obviously, we're not keeping them or anything. So, hell, we would give them both barrels.
Yeah. No, that makes
the wild side.
Our fish are like, it's like, oh, you missed your chance. We'll just let them swim by the boat, give it a minute, and we're going to reset on them a quarter mile down the beach. Like, you can keep getting your chances.
Yeah, so ours kind of come in the harbor. We don't really target them off the beach. Ours are actually in the harbor. And, you know, you'll have, you know, 40 other like-minded misfits out there with you. So it's kind of running and gunning and, do it while you can.
Ramming other boats, pirate tactics.
Oh, we've shot water balloons at friends before, so.
They're known for being badass predators, but do you guys ever have days where even if they're up in big groups, they go lockjaw and they get super pissy to hook?
I'll have them float around sometimes and they're a little bit tougher to feed. Like they'll like tail and like sit there just finning under the surface and like they're definitely a little bit more picky. But you know, by and large, they're pretty willing. But yeah, I see them sometimes a little picky.
So we have, you know, we just kicked off a social post today about some of the Floyd tagging we're going to be doing with the jacks. And there's kind of more coming here in the next couple of weeks with some of the researchers who've done acoustic tags and management opportunities, et cetera. But for a species we don't know a ton about, the migration that we get that comes through, it's very, very scheduled. And you can see, like, going into a major moon in different months in the spring, you can see the days leading up to it. Like, you fish Wednesday and you see 12 schools of, let's use 100 fish to round up. And then the next day you'll see like six schools of 200. And then the next day you'll see two. And it's like, literally looks like every jack under the sun's in one place. And then for like 36 hours, there'll be none of them on the beach. And so I obviously assume that's a spawning cycle. They're gathering up, then they go offshore. But that rate pre-spawn, right after post-spawn, they can be really, really weird. Where, like, we just saw a group a week and a half ago, and they are just running. Like, if you throw anything near them, we threw a live greenie into the middle, and they're all, like, dodging the greenie. Like, the greenie's chasing the jacks. And they're all 30-pound fish. They're massive. So I think it's a mixture of spawning stuff. But I was curious if y'all ever see them get a little bit pickier.
Well, it's kind of like when I used to fish salmon in Alaska, like, they're not eating either when they're there to make babies. So that's the only thing on their mind. But if there were certain triggers that you could do, like a big black leech, they would have to just have to hit it. And I don't know if the jacks spawn here, but we don't get little ones. I've never caught one, I don't want to say under 30 pounds, but they're all giant jacks here. We don't really get small ones. So I'm not sure if we have breeding stock, but when we find them in that situation where they're just sitting on the surface with their tails up, just one pop of a popper, it's kind of like that light switch. Even if they're not hungry, it's like, well, I got to kill this asshole, but he might eat my babies or something. So,
yeah.
Yeah, yep. I've always found them, really, if you could approach them right and not scare them with the boat or with the cast or whatever, yeah, they'll eat anything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, too, when after, I assume, which is them returning to the beach from spawning, it's very different. You know, they're all muscle. That head is so solid. That body is just packed strong. And you'll land a fish, big female, in that post-spawn once they came back into the beach. And you hold them up, and their belly and body is just really soft under the underside, too. And that's the same time of year where, like, it happened once or twice this year. Seems like it's like once or twice a season, I'll have them. They have like basically like a heart attack. And I don't know if it's that they're like post spawn, too stressed out or whatever, but you'll just be fighting one fish and you get it next to the boat and it's just battery goes to zero and it just rolls over.
I've had that.
I've seen that before. They're one of the few fish that it's like you have to force the angler to fight them because they will fight until they die. Yeah. Like a lot of other inshore fish will eventually roll over. A jack will go until it croaks.
I always tell clients that first run, you got to break them or you're going to be locked in for a long time.
If that fact doesn't cement their stature as a badass, I don't know what does. You know, they'll fight you to the death. So, like you said, I don't really know many fish that'll do that.
Well, Scotty, great segue into the Guides Association and us starting to tag jacks, because we also think that they're badass, and like we're the home for unappreciated badass fish.
False the band out. Of misfit toys.
Yeah, kind of like that. You know, your jacks, your false albacore. You know, these are fish that are not appreciated, and it's one of those things. It's like, man, if they went away, you'd be sorry, because they are junkyard dogs. Cody, I don't know, I think we've converted Bailey because Bailey has albie flies on his boat now, and he'll run into them when he's traversing the Gulf of Mexico to look for larger things with fins. He'll run across acres and acres of albies foaming up, and his clients love them. Go figure. Not exactly the, you know, on the top of the list, which you would think you were going to catch when you go to Louisiana, but when Bailey's running from one spot to another, there they are, huh?
Yeah, like the first thing you'd assume you're going to catch a redfish, and the second thing would be your buddy's ass in the trolling motor, and then the third thing would be
a rolled up piece of sweaty cheese.
You need to have some like beads on the boat, and if they do that again, just throw some beads on them while they're.
So I was at ICAST. I swung up there for a Captains for Clean Water event Tuesday night, and then bopped in real quick on Wednesday to see some familiar faces. But I was at the Bahio booth talking with Holiday, who's been guiding in on the Treasure Coast of Florida for coming up on 40 years now. And someone I hadn't met before walked up to him and goes, "How's fishing, Mike?" And he goes, "Honestly, god awful." And the kid kind of stared at him. He's like, "The only thing we could catch right now is albies. Like, you go offshore." Mike had a day, fished 6-7 hours offshore. And I think he had like one bite that wasn't an albie. And his perspective wasn't, "Wow, these bonita," as they call them down here, "wow, these bonita are so annoying. I can't get into the other stuff." It was like, "Can you imagine if we lost these? We would be down to nothing," right? And it's not to say that there wasn't boats out there, the sail fishing's been good, et cetera. But like that perspective of when the biodiversity disappears, I think the quote unquote underappreciated will start to become a little bit more appreciated when they're, you know, a bigger slice of the pie of what's available to chase. So I thought that was an interesting takeaway when I heard Mike say that.
Well, I'll tell you, we're going to go back to funny, ridiculous and embarrassing stories in a second, but I got to give a little bit of a plug to Sue, our COO, because she is so efficient at sending the Albie tags back. So like when you get these tagging kits that she puts, her and her husband put together and send out and manage and everything, the tags that we're using are kind of like, they cover like umbrella for a lot of different coastal pelagics. So, you know, things like a coastal pelagic would be something like a bluefish or a Spanish mackerel or a skipjack tuna or an albie or a jack crevalle. So because Sue is so incredibly efficient, she works with the people at the fishery science, the Southeast Fishery Science Center, who give us the tags, and that's where she sends all the information to. When we propose to them, you know, that jack crevalle are an underappreciated species that we don't know a hell of a lot about, we had to get on a couple of Zooms. But when the higher ups there found out that Sue's doing like 90% of the work, 95% of the work, and all they have to do is basically import an Excel file that Sue's done for them, they were like, "Yeah, why the hell not? Let's learn something about jacks. We need to." So something that I'm personally proud of, because much like Mike Holiday, Bailey, Scotty, and countless other guides up and down the coast, these are day saver fish. These are day saver fish. If the glamour fish are getting persnickety, you know, at least a guide can go out and the tug is the drug and they're
day saver. I got a dozen people who text me once to twice a week asking when they can book 2025 jack season.
I just booked jack dates for 2025 next.
Not tarpon.
Yesterday.
Not tarpon. Not permit. We're going to fish for tarpon and permit and snook and sailfish. Well, by and large,
these fish aren't like tarpon, or kind of, they can be, man. And like, you know what I mean? Like you go, they'll pay $20,000 to go across the world and have permit mock them. And then they can come back and catch a couple of jacks that'll pull their arm out of their socket, you know, like close to home. And they'll eat. They act like fish should act, right? They eat.
I've had anglers who have fished in the Seychelles who came in the boat with me the last two seasons. And, you know, that meter jeet is what everyone talks about, like 100 centimeters, you know, 1 meter jeet. And so I started measuring a couple of my fish off centimeters recently, and we've been cracking jacks. I had one go for 125, right? So everyone wants a massive. The only thing is, obviously, the jeets build up, seem like they build up more muscle, seem like they have more weight per scale size than the jacks do. But some of these jacks, depending on, and I know Bailey gets them as well, and I know Scotty gets the same one. I mean, 30, a very reasonable opportunity to stick a 30 to 40 pound fish. And that's not like a 20 that's being exaggerated to 40 like happens in some other species, or, you know, a tarpon where every 60 pound tarpon is 100 pounds. These fish are legitimately 30 to 40 pounds and largely feeding on the surface. So a lot of people like get through the fun of feeding them the first run, the drag screaming, we tighten down the drag a little, we'll close the gap of the boat a little. Then they get into like the actual arm wrestling stage. And it's like, all right, what do I do now? It's like, there's no pull it
now
in.
You're locked in.
you're the asshole who came here to hooked it in the face, and you're connected to it by a stick. Like, you have to pull it in now. It's not just like, okay, just press the button now and it appears in here. I think a lot of people have that reality, which is like, oh shit, like, I thought it would be cool to hook a hard fighting fish. Now I actually have to fight a hard fighting fish.
I had a guy a few years ago, a good client of mine who was about a little bit younger than me. And we were out there, we got on some big jacks, and it was like, we were in the surf and, you know, the waves, we couldn't even get up on the bow very good. We're like getting tossed around with the jacks for everywhere. And I, like, the fishing was so good and I knew it was going to go downhill like quick. So I was like, we are going to capitalize while we're on it. And I made him catch 4 jacks before he could stop to get a sip of water. He's like, by the 4th one, his like arms are shaking. He's like, I just want a break. And I'm like, no, keep fighting. Like, you're not stopping until you get that one in. I'm like holding the water. I'm like, you want this? Finish the fight.
What's your record for most jacks on fly in one trip?
I don't know, maybe like 6 or I don't know. I mean, from one guy, probably half a dozen. I mean, they get tired of it.
We got to 7 and they were like, they were young dudes, like super fired up, ready to go. But towards the, like, I mean, they were drenched in sweat. It looked like they had done 3-hour CrossFit workout.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're over here talking about class tippet. I'm like, what the hell is that? Just putting the cable in the reel. We're just roping them down here. Y'all remind me of a story that I gotta say. So this is like probably one of the dumbest things that ever happened to me in this vein. So one time we were fishing on a flat and we're like throwing at some little sheep's head or something. And of course my client like manages to like just like masterfully hook the little oyster head that these sheep said were kind of like tailing on. So he hangs his fly up in the oyster head. And I think he had, I don't remember the rod he had, but it was brand new. And he's like, I'm like, just roll cast it off. And he's like trying to roll cast it. And he can't roll cast the fly off. So I'm like, oh, hand me the rod. I'll do it. Cause I'm a little bit higher up. So he hands me his fly rod to like roll cast the fly off the thing. And I go to do it and I roll cast it and I like try to pop it off at the end. And when I, and this is like a 10 weight. So it had to have been like, it had to be compromised. It certainly wasn't my technique, but I like pulled back to like pop it off and the rod just crumples into pieces. And I'm just like, oh, it's like day 1 of 4. This guy's brand new rod he bought for the trip. And I was like, well, that usually doesn't happen.
There are definitely some times where you take over, you're like, watch this, and you have a Jedi moment, and they like instantly gain, they're like, oh my God, you know, he has my respect, my trust. And there's sometimes I've had a couple times where just people aren't pulling, and I'm like, you're gonna have to pull harder this way, or we're just never gonna get fish in. And I've done it a couple times where I take the rod and I pull as hard as I could in a proper angle. And I'm like, see, it's not going to break. And I did do that one time on someone's jack where I took it and I'm like, hey, watch this. And I pulled and the hook pulled out of the fish. And I'm like, fuck. And so I just like handed them back the rod and I'm like, real. Oh, is it gone? Oh, no. Okay. Well, they're up there. Let's go get back in front of them. It was a tough one. I had to swallow my pride there.
No more fish for you, loser. Pull harder next time.
Were you paying me to have fun? You should stop that immediately. The voodoo moments where you're like, no, skip it under like this, and you skip it perfectly, and you know in your head you're like, hell yeah, I'm the superhero on that one. And then every once in a while it comes back to bite you in the ass where you're like, here, do this, and it breaks, and you're like, oh yeah. Shit.
Turn that crank that drag down a little bit. The second they touch it, the line just and you're just like, oh.
Crank it down. I meant the other way. Crank it down lighter.
Yeah, you can always just blame them. You stupid. Turned it the wrong way. Turned it too much. Those drags are sensitive. I wanted 1/2 micrometer turn. I always laugh because sometimes you do hear like some dudes like, clearly the client did. I try to like tell the client, like, you actually did all right there. Just it's fishing and like it didn't work out. But some guides will never ever give into that reality, and they're like, you freaking idiot, I mean, you put that thing like 2 inches off and it hit him in the nostril and like the feather tickled his nostril and he got spooked and he's off on that. If that fish has to look at it at a third of an angle on the right side, he's out. And I just...
They love that power dynamic, right? It's like, I am the almighty God of decisions. And if it doesn't work, you have failed me.
I think it's so funny. Because I'll all the time be like, well, you know, you should have caught that one, but you didn't. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be fun. I had a guy hook and jump off like a very legitimately upper 20 to close to 30-pound snook, like a mega one, a real one. And I don't BS on snook size too often. This one was the real deal, pre-spawn female coming down, making her way to the inlet. And like he hooked it, jumped it off, the entire boat saw it, and he looked at me and I go, well, that was awesome, right? It wasn't like a bow, you should have bowed. It's like, that was sweet. Like, what else? Why put negative on this? But I had probably almost half a dozen of my first, let's say 200 customers thank me at the end of the day, being like, wow, I've been on trips where the guide is just so mean to me. Thanks for being nice. And I'm like, you're paying me. How would I be mean to you? The whole point's that you have fun. I've never understood that mentality.
Oh yeah. And it turns into what the clients like remember about the day, right? Is like that outburst. Cause you know, sometimes we are having our bad days as guides and you don't want to be out there all day, or you're hot, or, you know, you're sunburnt, you know, or whatever's going, or somebody hands you a rolled up piece of cheese and, you know, whatever, your whole vibe for the day off and you're just ready to rip them. But like the second you cross that line, sometimes it changes the trip for sure.
Yeah. Well, this has been a lot of fun and I have a bunch of stories about guide dynamics and I know these guys do. I've only been doing it half a decade and I'd love to hear all theirs, but we have to jump because we have a pretty exciting call with a leading researcher about one of the species we've been talking about on this. So we're going to have to put a bow on this one, gentlemen, and hopefully ring up part two, maybe next week or in the coming. We'll have to see how much stupidity we can mix into our curriculum with all the, you know, scientific and policy-based stuff. So, but a little bit of stupid and a little bit of fun's a nice, healthy dose every once in a while.
Sounds
here's
good.
Here's to rolled up cheese and Remy middle-aged Remoulade sauce and two guys lassoing themselves on the bow of a skiff. Thanks everyone for joining, and we'll have like kind of a continuation of this real soon.